Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm so happy to be here with all of you today. I have a great show planned for you. My guest will be Chef Marcus Giuliano, and he is a chef and green restaurateur up in the Hudson Valley, and I'm really thrilled to have him on and talk more about his restaurant and his mission in just a little bit. But first, I want to share with you things going on around the news, things going on in around the New York area that you might want to participate in, and of course, share my weekly recipe with you. So I wanted to start by sharing with you the New York Times Magazine article that I read this week, which is about, you know, the fact that they knew what was going on more than 30 years ago as far as the climate goes. And although it was in the news, our government and governments around the world did not take it up seriously enough. Climate change is the most important issue that we are dealing with in these days, and yet if you look at the papers, you would not know that. And this article was just so depressing, and yet not a wake-up call, because I feel like, at least for me, it's been, you know, I've been so aware of this all of my life, but it is an issue that really has to be taken seriously. 30 years ago, you know, when they were discussing it and really in the position of possibly saving the world as we know it today, they just felt like it wasn't going to be good for business. You know, there was too many lobbyists from the fossil fuel companies and biotech companies that were just pushing and lobbying politicians and making big donations to keep it on the back burner. And other people said, oh, well, we'll deal with it in the moment. You know, there will be great innovation that will come up that will take care of it. And yes, you know, there are always innovations that are coming up that are wonderful. But there were real things that we could have done that we didn't do, and we need to do them now. And one thing that I wrote about this week in my newsletter is really looking at agriculture as a way to help climate change or help the crisis. Right now, you know, in the production of meat and all kinds of farming, it's responsible for more greenhouse gas emissions than all the cars on the planet. I mean, that's huge. And now we can, you know, really start turning it around, stop cutting down the rainforest, start planting more forests again, stop using the land just to graze the animals and grow food for the animals, and start sequestering, building up the soil and help to sequester the carbon that's in the atmosphere into the ground where it can be useful for the soil and take it out of the air. So there was a great soil summit in New York State where conventional farmers, along with organic and sustainable farmers, really are taking up the issue of building up soil and knowing that soil really makes a difference. So, you know, that's hopeful, but it's really important that everybody really look at this climate change issue, and it needs to affect our daily life. If it's not, it needs to affect our daily life. It needs to affect every decision you make. And that's one thing that my guest today will talk about, because he is a chef, but he really marries his dedication and care for the planet and social responsibility with his business. And that's one of the reasons I'm so happy to have him on. Some of the other things that I was talking about in my newsletter this week, and if you don't get my newsletter, you might want to sign up for it at iegreen.com, because every week I not only talk about things that are really you know, in the news at the moment, but I also just talk about long-term issues, and I share an event calendar that is really up-to-date and I think really meets an important need. I get feedback from people all the time thanking them. So if you actually have an event that you would like me to add to my newsletter, please send that my way as well. But another thing I wrote about was plastics in our food. We know that we've been talking about plastics in our food and plastics in the ocean that get into our fish. There's also these nanoparticles that are so small. They're in our sunscreen. And they also are in our food through reusable plastic containers. I mean, we all get takeout food and they come in these plastic containers. And I heard years ago you don't want to microwave those, and I, you know, don't use the microwave very much anyway, but I knew not to microwave plastic, and I think most people know that now. But I didn't know not to put my plastic containers into the dishwasher. I didn't realize that putting plastic containers into the dishwasher heats them up so much that those nanoparticles are not able to be seen, but they are in those plastic containers, and they get into your food that you're storing in those. So no more plastic containers in dishwashers. You must wash them by hand. You know, we all want to reuse those because we don't want to just dump them in the landfill, which is a good thing. It would be great if we could do away with plastic takeout containers and go more towards cardboard and paper. But I know for some things that need to be leak-proof, that doesn't make sense either. So it's all about finding a balance. But thinking about the planet needs to be a part of every decision you make. It's not only just about you in the moment. It's about how your decisions affect everything around you. And everything is connected. And we just have to all remember that. So important. Some great things going on in and around the city. This weekend is the NOFA Summer Conference, which if you don't have plans this weekend, that's something you really want to go to. It's always a great time. It's, you know, NOFA, every state has their own NOFA chapter. New York State has a winter conference. They all have their own winter conferences. But in the summer, everyone comes together. And it's hard to get the farmers off their farms, but you get farmers from everywhere, food producers from everywhere. And this year it's up at Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts. So if you're free this weekend, check that out. August 16th, Thursday evening, there's a sip and savor of the Garden State at the James Beard House. And that's a wonderful tasting of highlighted foods from New Jersey. And it is being led by Chef Craig Polignano. I'm sorry, I'm probably butchering that name, from the Jockey Hollow Bar and Kitchen, and wine from various vineyards throughout New York State. So that's at the James Beard Foundation. And you can go to their website to buy tickets for that. Also on the 16th, there's a event called In the Weeds, Local Foraging with Jamie Young and Will Horowitz. And this is an opportunity to take a walk with two guys that are really passionate about foraging local foods that grow right in your backyard, in parks, on sidewalks, everywhere, and things that you can then take and use in your kitchen. And so it's being sponsored from the Museum of Food and Drink in Brooklyn. So you can go to their website to find out about that. But that should be fun. That's from 6:30 to 8:30 on Thursday, August 16th. On August 17th, I'm actually giving a talk on slow food along with a cooking demo and a farm-to-table lunch. And this is at Old Westbury Gardens, which is one of the Gold Coast North Shore states, originally owned by not the Grace family. I think it was the Fricks, but beautiful, beautiful estate, beautiful gardens, and they're having a adult summer camp all week from the 12th through the 17th. And one day is beekeeping, another day is plants, recognizing plants. Anyway, my day is about slow food, and it's on the Friday, the last day of the week. And I will be talking about the slow food movement, and we'll take a walk into the vegetable garden that they have on site, pick some vegetables, and then we'll do a cooking demo. And I have, you know, a great menu designed for that event. So you register through Old Westbury Gardens for that, so you can go to their website. On August 18th, there's an open market and volunteer day at Eagle Street Rooftop Farm in Brooklyn, and that's during the day, and it's free, and 1 to 4. And then in the evening, they're having a roof-to-plate pizza party with, a roof-to-plate pizza party where you can design your personal pizza, and that should be a really fun event too, and that costs $15. So you can go make a whole day of it. It should be a lot of fun. Also, Slow Food North Shore is having their Snail of Approval dinner at the Perennial Restaurant in Garden City on September 5th, and that should be really wonderful. But I don't want to forget to also talk about the Climate March that's coming up around the country. It's on September 8th. Washington, D.C. will have a huge march. But New York City, because there's a conflict with the West Indies parade on September 8th, they are doing their event, big event, down at the Battery Park on September 6th. That's a Thursday evening, September 6th. So that's something that you really want to put, mark your calendars and go to. I have lots more on my calendar of events, but I don't want to take the time to really go through all of them right now. So do check the calendar of events, because there's so many really wonderful things coming up. I want to share with you my recipe this week, and I just titled it July Garden Stir Fry, because it all came out of the garden. You know, what I picked that day, other than the cauliflower and the ginger, everything came out of my garden. Oh, and the tofu, of course. So I used 1 cake of extra firm organic tofu that I cut into cubes, 1 onion cut in half and then sliced into crescent moons, 2 carrots cut into wedges, 1 Japanese eggplant cut into wedges, 2 cups of green beans. I grew Snail of Approval heirloom beans. They're on the Ark of Taste, and they came right from Slow Food. One was jack beans and one was Christmas lima beans, and I used both of those in this. 2 cups of chopped kale or other greens that you have, 2 cups of cauliflower florets, 2 small baby bok choys, 1 yellow summer squash, 1/2 a red pepper, 6 portobello mushrooms. Oh, I didn't grow those either. 6 baby portobello mushrooms. Ginger, it was about an inch piece that I grated, 4 cloves of garlic, some olive oil, 1/4 cup of tamari to taste, 1 teaspoon of dark sesame oil, 1 tablespoon hot sesame oil, and 1/4 cup of aji marin. And I started by laying out the tofu cubes on a dry towel and covering them with another towel and pressed lightly just to absorb some of the water. And then I cut the tofu into the cubes, and I put them out on a large cookie sheet that was lined with parchment paper, and I covered them with another piece of parchment paper. I drizzled the tofu cubes with a little bit of olive oil, 2 teaspoons of the minced garlic, and 2 teaspoons of the minced ginger, and 2 tablespoons of tamari. And using a spatula, I actually tossed the tofu cubes on the cookie sheet first before I put the parchment paper on top, so that I was baking it in the oven, and it would keep some of the moisture in, but at the same time, it did get golden brown on the bottom. And then halfway through, I turned them so that the top could also get golden brown. And I cooked those in a 400-degree oven for about 10 to 15 minutes until they were golden brown on both sides. And while those were cooking, I covered the bottom of my wok with a little bit of olive oil. And when the oil was hot, I added the onions, the carrots, the garlic, and the ginger. And I continued cooking those at medium-high heat, stirring constantly for about 5 minutes. Then I added the green beans and the mushrooms. I had steamed the eggplant for just a few minutes first to get them soft, and then I added those to the stir-fry. Instead of adding more oil at this point, I added a little bit more water just to help sauté and to deglaze the bottom of the wok. And then I added the kale and the cauliflower and stirred that up for a few more minutes. Then I added the peppers and the summer squash. And basically you're adding it in the order of how quickly it takes to cook. So how you cut the vegetables matters, how big the pieces are matter. The idea is that the harder vegetables, the root vegetables, always go in first, and then the leafy greens go in after that. The green beans actually take a little bit longer, so they go in right after the onions and the carrots, unless you blanch them first. And then lastly, I added the bok choy, which cooks up really very fast. Then I added the mirin and the tamari and cooked that for a few minutes, and that helps steam everything, brings all the flavors together. And then I took the tofu out of the oven, and I put that into the stir fry. And the reason I do that is, you know, people always complain that the tofu, when you just put it into the wok straight away, it can tend to fall apart. And you can, of course, pre-cook the tofu in the wok so that you're doing everything in the wok, and get that started first and get a nice crust on it before you add the vegetables. And that will work too. But this is also a time saver, because this way the tofu can be cooking while you're stir-frying the vegetables, and then just add the tofu at the end and stir it in and let it absorb the flavors of the tamari and the mirin. So you want it to be in the wok for at least a few minutes, absorbing all those flavors. And then the last thing you're going to do is you're going to add the dark sesame oil and the hot sesame oil, which gives it that sesame flavor. Dark sesame oil is used as a seasoning, not really for cooking. So you want to put that in last. And then I garnished it with toasted sesame seeds. And that is it. Really comes together very fast, super delicious. And let me know if you make it, and I'd love feedback. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest this week, Chef Marcus Giuliano. He is an award-winning chef, green restaurateur, and a food activist. He's devoted his career to whole food, whole life approach. And he's an expert at marrying healthy food with ethnically and socially responsible business practices. And Marcus is a wine and craft beer expert specializing in small independent brands. And his restaurant, Aroma Time Bistro, has been featured on CNN, Dr. Oz, New York Post, New York Times. And it is a wonderful, wonderful restaurant. I actually have some history there that I'll share in just a little bit. But Chef Marcus, are you with me? Thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure.
So, I don't know, I'm sure you don't remember because it's so many years ago, but I had my son's graduation party up at your restaurant. He graduated from New Paltz back in 2010. And on a Sunday, I think you're normally not even open on Sunday. I think you opened for us. And you just did such a lovely, lovely party for our family. But, you know, as a as an organic chef myself, you know, my son was graduating. I was looking for a restaurant that we could have a party at, and yours was the best one around. So we drove the half hour from New Paltz, and it was wonderful.
Excellent. Yes, I do remember that.
Uh-huh. So I'd like to start by just hearing a little bit about your story. Tell us a little bit of your history. How did you become a chef? Did you always know you wanted to be a chef?
So not really. I knew I always wanted to be in business. I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I knew I wanted to do something with business. I just didn't know I'd be in the restaurant business. But coming from an Italian family and food being the focal point of everything, I realized I knew a lot about food growing up as a kid, and that I loved food, and that was my passion. And I had worked in some of the hotels here in the Catskills as a waiter, and then I went into the kitchen and started being a prep cook and then a line cook. And I sort of evolved by being around food and with my family and in the restaurant hotel business, and just knowing that I wanted to do something business-wise. It was just all a natural fit. And it was my first year in college, I decided that I wanted to switch majors because I was reading my cookbook more than my accounting book. I'm glad I did take the accounting courses, because accounting is extremely important in this industry, as it is in really most businesses, but especially in the restaurant business. It's one of the only industries that you walk into a place and you ask them how much they paid for it, and they really have no idea. You walk into a tile store and they know how much each tile costs. You know, walk into a tire store and they know how much each tire costs. And restaurants just don't know that, and that's the tricky part and why restaurants have such a high failure rate. So the accounting is a must. You need to have a math business mind and be able to equate things like that. So it just was a natural progression for me to jump in as a chef and then later own a restaurant. And it took me about 10 years to open from the time, a little over 10 years from the time I started cooking, to open Aroma Time.
Mm-hmm. Did you grow up in the Hudson Valley?
I grew up in Ellenville. My family moved here when I was 9. And then after high school, my girlfriend at the time, my wife and I, we had 28 years and married 20, my high school sweetheart. After high school, she went to college, I went to college, and we had gotten married after our colleges were finished, and we moved back 10 years after high school when we started having a family to be closer to our parents, who still to this day do live in the Ellenville area.
Uh-huh. That's great. It's so nice to be around extended family when you have a family. It's just so rich for everybody involved, and just it's just such a natural balance. It's just too much to do it all by yourself. And I think so many people don't get that benefit these days anymore because everyone's moving everywhere. It's just really wonderful when families can be together and help each other out through this, because I know what goes into managing a restaurant. And your wife works with you in the restaurant, correct?
Yes, we both run it together.
Yes. I have emails from Jamie going way back from catering this party. So that's wonderful. So has your style of food always been farm to table and healthier? And how did you get into the green business? And when did you decide that eating healthy was really important?
Sure, that's a great question. Because they, back in the early 90s in culinary school, farm to table wasn't really a buzzword. It wasn't a trend. There were a couple chefs out there doing it, like Alice Waters, Rick Bayless. There were very, very few chefs out there doing that. And it was all about cooking very fine French-styled food, learning your French basics, your French foundation. And I realized about 10 years into that, that I was killing myself. I was killing myself and my guests with all this rich, fatty, supposedly delectable food that was loaded with white flour, white sugar, and of course, when you buy convenience products, there's just all kinds of chemicals loaded into it. And I was working at these very beautiful hotels, beautiful restaurants, and I was just in shock to see that, you know, an 18-wheeler can pull up every single day and unload tons and tons and pallets of food, of uniform food, exact size food, whether it was beef filet mignon or trout or salmon or whatever it was always so uniform. And I kind of knew back then that our food was a factory system. And one of the chefs said to me, he goes, when I was a young apprentice, he goes, Marcus, one day we're going to go back to food being raised by a farmer. This is in the early 90s, a chef told me this. I was like, oh yeah, that would be nice to have food that comes from a real farm, a real farmer. He goes, that's going to be, you know, one of the big things coming up in the future. And so I kind of knew that the food that I was serving wasn't really the answer to the future of the industry as far as the sourcing. Maybe the style might have been, but then again, loading all of that rich food just every night on diners' plates was just, you know, and I thought at the time that, oh, wow, we have happy guests in the hotel and the restaurant. Everybody loves what we're doing. We're very highly rated. But when you're eating that food every single day, it's not sustainable for your health. And I found that out 10 years into the industry. I was 29 years old. My daughter was a couple years old. Maybe I was 28. And I discovered that I had high blood pressure, high cholesterol. Every job I got, I always gained more weight just because I just accept that as the fact. Okay, new job, I'm going to gain more weight, and I'm going to increase my pant size. And that cycle had continued from when I was about 19 to 27, 28 years old. And finally one day I said, enough is enough. I went to my doctor. He told me I needed high cholesterol medication. Like them, I said, I'm not taking the meds. You already have me on 5 or 6 meds already. Everything from prescription deodorant to acid reflux medication. That medication wasn't even working for acid reflux. He had me sleeping up at night in a chair, and wanted to investigate doing an operation to help me digest food better and have less acid reflux. And this is the kind of madness that I was facing at a young age by eating all this super, super rich food. And of course, being in the restaurant industry, the stress levels are very high, and you eat late at night, and you basically just eat what at the time we were working, and we were eating what the guests were eating, because there was leftover food. And there's just enough foie gras and lamb loins and boursin cheese that you can have at midnight, and then followed by creme brulee, and then going out at night with the guys for a beer after work, which was all part of the process. And I said, that's enough. I told my doctor, there's no way I'm taking these meds. And he goes, you need them. You need them. And I didn't know much about alternative health or how much. We all know you are what you eat. That's the oldest, most profound statement out there. We don't know who told it this, but we know that that's sort of true. We don't want to really believe it, because then we have to take action, and we have to be responsible for our actions. And I'd read one book by Dr. Bernard Jensen, Be Well, Be Wise. It was all in bee pollen. I was trying to get rid of my asthma, and somebody said, this book might help you with your asthma, Marcus. And so I got kind of a little bit involved and really intrigued about holistic nutrition. And when he said, you need his meds, I convinced him somehow to give me 30 days to change my diet and to do things differently. And I knew exactly what I was doing. I just saw a PBA special the day before Gary Noll was talking, and I went and bought Gary Noll's new book, Get Healthy Now, and started just jumping into the book. And I said, I know what I'm doing. I have a plan. And 30 days later, I went to get my blood work done, and he looked at me and he goes, I don't know what you did, nor did he ever ask me, like, at least I don't know what you did, but the medication would not have even worked as that good. Your results are fantastic.
In 30 days.
And I noticed in 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
30 days. And then I noticed my blood pressure was going away, my asthma was improving, my weight was dropping, I no longer needed prescription deodorant, my digestion had fixed itself. And within 90 days, I had lost 30 pounds, and everything had diminished, including asthma, lifelong affliction to asthma at 28 years old, gone.
Wow. And
so
you did that yourself.
At that point, I started taking my own lunch to work. And there's not many chefs that bring their own lunch to work and their own dinner to work. And so I was really in a conflict now of knowing the food that I was cooking was not good for the environment and not good for us. How do I keep this madness up and keep a career going in this direction? And I'll never forget, my wife said to me the day I brought tofu home, she goes, you're ruining your career. You want to be this celebrity chef, this famous chef, this man. And she goes, what in the world are you going to do with tofu? You're ruining your career. And I said,
but
I'm saving my life. You know, and that was a conception back then. And it took her a couple of years to jump on board, but she fully came on board with my lifestyle of eating. And, of course, we were at a point where I couldn't work for anybody. I didn't want to work for anybody because I didn't want to go against my values and my beliefs. And that's how Aromatime came into play. We had to open up our own place that we truly had a passion for. So I'm not the restaurant owner that goes to Whole Foods to shop for his family and then turns around and buys whatever. And there's many, many, many restaurant owners that do that because they all know. They all know there's consequences on the food to the environment and to our health. So they'll buy different food for their family versus what they're giving to their guests. And I didn't want to be in that position myself, so that's how Aromatime came into play.
Mm-hmm. And so did you forge relationships with local farmers so that you could buy direct from them at that point? I know that was ahead of the time. That's more of the trend now.
It was ahead, yes. So in 1999, I had done something in Colorado. I was a partner in a restaurant, and this is all when it first started happening. And I made relationships with over 50 small farms in the late 90s. And I had farmers that were telling me that I saved their marriage because there was now a restaurant interested in their food and their products. We sat down, I rounded up 10 or 15 other chefs from other restaurants. We sat down at a long round table with all the farmers in El Paso County in Colorado, which is Colorado Springs. And we said, what can you guys grow for us? We have $5 million of purchasing power on this side of the table. And all the farmers' eyes lit up. And we started working with farmers directly back then. That was my first introduction to farmers. And we even worked with a lot of people with Fast Food Nation. The gentleman who hung himself was a farmer in El Paso County. And there was no hope for the farm, and that's what he ended up doing. Went up and hung himself. We started working with that farm, and his brother was one who took the farm over fully. And a year or two later, his brother came to me and goes, Marcus, I wanted my kids to get off the farm, but because of what you guys have done and your collaboration with the chefs, he goes, my farm is now viable, and I want my kids to go to college and come back and know that the farm is here and they can actually work the farm. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like, you have people that are calling me and tell me that I'm saving their marriage and that they want their kids to work their farm. And after, you know, just 2 years prior, his brother hung himself. I was like, that's the full picture I was looking for in my career. That's the missing link. That gives me satisfaction to know that I'm putting great food on the table and I'm respecting the people that are producing our food. And from that point on...
Yeah, you're building up your local economy. You know,
right.
State New York was so depressed, and it still to this day, I mean, it struggles with that. And if people can buy local and put the money right into their communities, I mean, It is. Exactly. Like I said, it's the whole picture.
Exactly. So when we moved to Colorado, I took a job at a country club and knew that I just needed to go back into my own business, my own restaurant. That's when we started searching for a location, and it became Ellenville. Now, in Ellenville in 2003 was very depressed. We had lost all the major hotels. We had lost all the industry, Channel Master. If you watch TV prior to 1985, you had an antenna on your roof. The antenna was made in Ellenville, New York, at Channel Masters by the Resniks. We had Strayed Cutlery. We had VAW Aluminum, which later became Hydro Aluminum. We had two major Catskill resorts. We had clothing manufacturers, JM Original, General Sportswear. We had, and the town was booming until the early 80s. And by the turn of the century, 2000, we were very, very depressed. And we were the very first restaurant to open there in probably 20 or 30 years. And people were like, what are you doing in Ellenville? They're not going to make it, this and that. And now we're trying to buy food from farmers. And farmers are like, I don't drive to Ellenville. Why would I drive to Ellenville? There's nothing in Ellenville. You know, I'm making a trip on my way by a half an hour, 45 minutes. And they would all go to Kingston or New Paltz. None of the farmers would really come to us. There were still a few farms in the area, but nothing of significance. So the first couple of years were really tough. We resorted to buying organic food from distributors. We relied upon that tremendously. We still do buy a lot of organic food from distributors. But mm-hmm. now we've forged relationships with over 40 farms, and they're all listed on our website. Because now people know that, hey, this is the way of the future. And between the farm hubs and the distributors now sourcing from farms, we just have so many advantages. And we in the Hudson Valley is a true chef's fantasy, dreamland. I mean, all the farms here, the rich agriculture, the wines, now the distilleries, breweries. It's an amazing
place. Famous black dirt.
Yes, the famous black dirt.
Uh-huh.
So we're just so blessed to be in this area, and we have forged relationships with over 40 farms. They're listed on our website. I mean, everything from cranberries for Thanksgiving Day to all kinds of cheeses and meats and polenta and all kinds of flours, buckwheat flour, to all kinds of produce. Even in the wintertime, the winter growers, we only bought one case of Florida tomatoes all winter, and that was the week of New Year's Eve when we had that really, really tough cold snap, and it was a short week and we couldn't quite get a delivery. We had to get one case of tomatoes from Florida, and everything else has been Florida's from tomatoes from winter growers here in New York, and a couple times we had to buy from a farm in Maine. But these winter growers are out there. Broccoli year round is local from here, from Hudson Valley. Cauliflower, the same thing. So it is amazing of the list of produce that we have year-round, besides all the meats and cheeses and dairy.
So I assume they're growing them all in greenhouses, or, you know?
All in greenhouses, yes.
Uh-huh. Wow. That's great. Yeah, I've seen the setup up at Stone Barns, but that's not your average farmer, that's for sure.
No.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's amazing. Really amazing. You know, so let's talk about the numbers, because I know, you know, you were in accounting prior to the restaurant business, and you and I both know that purchasing high-quality organic food costs more money. And you're now in a, you know, situated in a depressed community, you know, that is struggling. How did you make it work with your customer base to, you know, come to a price point that people could afford and that you could make money?
That's a great question. You know, one of the downfalls of most restaurants is they base their pricing on what other restaurants price. So I do a lot of coaching and consulting now, and I look at somebody's menu. I go, why are you charging $10 for your burger? Hoping that they say, oh, it cost me $1.50. But what they usually say is because my neighbor charges $10.50, so I need to undercut them. And that is the worst philosophy ever. You really need to figure out what your food costs you and charge the appropriate price. But now here's the problem. If you're going to be charging a higher price, you have to attach a story to it. You have to attach an emotion to it and really let people understand what you're doing. And I was doing that back in Colorado when we started buying all the local stuff. And we switched to a lot of organic ingredients. It was my job as a chef to convey the value that the guest is getting on their plate. I just can't say, oh, come have a portobello appetizer. And it has to be local Buick Farms, organic portobello, you know, and it's my job as a chef to market it as what the ingredient truly is. And of course, some people could care less about this, But there's a lot of people that really go out of their way to eat like this now, that really want to know that they're supporting something local, that want to eat organic, that want to eat healthier. And these people will go out of their way to pay a little more for the higher quality ingredients that you're going to get. Do I charge enough for my food? I know I don't charge enough, because it's just, it would be, I'd price myself really out of the market. So, for example, farm salmon versus wild salmon, we only serve wild salmon, and it does cost 2.5 times the price. However, mm-hmm. when you're going around in our town to eat salmon, you're going to get it for $23, $24, $25. Our price is $29. There's no way I could charge 2.5 times the price for
right.
salmon. So, you know, it's a fine line balancing act of really consistently running numbers and knowing the heartbeat of your business. And I always tell other restaurateurs, my coaching clients, you'll never go to the doctor and not expect them to take your blood pressure or your weight, but yet you go to your restaurant every single day and you don't check the heartbeat of your business, the food cost and the labor cost, and you don't run P&Ls. And once you start understanding the trends in your restaurant, the dish sells the most, how much goes into that dish, how much labor, how much food, you can tweak things around to know that, you know, we really need to push certain dishes to make up for the salmon that we're really not making that much money on. And that's where the whole balancing act comes in.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And then at the same time, you know, cooking salmon has a lot less labor than some of the vegetarian dishes that take, you know, so much more time in preparation. You know, that's one of the things that
exactly.
I always have to tell that story to people, because as a vegetarian chef, primarily, I mean, I do cook fish at, you know, sometimes for customers, but and even for my family, but in general, and I always feel like I'm cheating sometimes if I cook fish. I mean, it's so quick, it's easy, you know, if I'm really low on time, you know, that's something you can put on the table really quick. When I make a vegetarian dish, you know, it's not unusual for it to take a half an hour to an hour. So, you know, you have to balance that, of course, as well, how much
Absolutely.
Labor is going into something. Wow, great conversation. Let's take a couple-minute break, Marcus, and then we'll come back, and I want to talk more about your business, because I know you go way beyond the restaurant in what you're doing, and it's just really exciting. So, everyone, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Chef Marcus Giuliano from Aroma Thyme Bistro up in Ellenville. Be right back.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network, your voice for independent views.
Hi, everybody. It's Beatie Condrados, host of the Ask Beatie Show. To Audio Now, the Progressive Radio Network now has an app. All you have to do is go to the App Store on your cell phone and search the Progressive Radio Network. You can listen live to PRN shows and also listen to past archive shows. So go to your App Store and download it right now.
The Progressive Radio Network is a thinking person's network for our world's progressive visionaries and stakeholders and great thinkers to assemble on a commercial, free, and listener-supported network. Our provocative hosts speak freely and passionately on intriguing and urgent topics such as health and news and politics and women's issues and philosophy and more that directly impact our lives. Progressive Radio Network takes chances. Our voices and ideas are not always welcomed by corporate media. So Progressive Radio Network is a very important outlet for these great thinkers.
This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and I'm the host of What Women Must Know, every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. As a naturopathic doctor and psychotherapist, I am always seeking the latest solutions to help you rejuvenate and regenerate your body, mind, and spirit. So join me, Dr. Cheryl, and my inspiring guests, authors, health practitioners, and wise elders to empower yourself by expanding your knowledge about your health and your hormones and to gain fresh new perspectives on life. That's What Women Must Know every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Chef Marcus Giuliano. He's the chef of Aroma Time Bistro up in Ellenville. And we're talking about his philosophy in the kitchen and out of the kitchen. Chef, you with me?
I sure am.
Great. So let's talk a little bit about, I mean, we have, it's all been integrated, your views, you know, beyond the kitchen and your commitment to good food. You've also been a little bit of a whistleblower for some other people. I was really intrigued by your foodfraudtv.com website. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, absolutely. So just as in like a lot of other businesses, there's a lot of just dishonesty. And knowing the full impact of our food on our environment and our health, and being very concerned about that. And a lot of us are concerned about that. They want to eat. If they eat meat, they might want to eat grass-fed beef. If they're eating salmon, it wants to be wild salmon. If they're eating, going to look organic, they want it to be organic, whether it's broccoli or chicken, or they want to eat a high-quality vegetarian meal or just a meal without chemicals. I see a lot of chefs being involved in organizations. There's a lot of chefs who just don't care about what they're serving, except for when it comes to describe what they're serving. And many
right, they
chefs,
want to greenwash.
They want to greenwash. They want right. want to make you think that you are eating something that you're really not. And watching chefs do that for years, I got very, very upset. And then you see celebrity chefs doing it. And it's like, don't these people care about anything? And some of them do it because it's an honest mistake. And a lot of them do not do it because it's an honest mistake, because they know the financial gain is going to be immense. And mm-hmm. they can charge more and pay less. And I have had so many employees email me that get to that website and say, my boss does this, my boss does that. And they're just, and it's shocking. And the very first time this came into play, I had experienced a fraudulent mislabeling of beef at a very famous chef's restaurant, very, very, very famous chef, on many shows, a judge on shows, really outspoken, and really anti-GMO, and goes to Congress and says, we need to get this stuff labeled and everything. And him, of all people, I was mislabeling beef as grass-fed beef. And I called the Grass-Fed Association. I said, what can you do about this? There's people that go to his restaurant. He's serving 200-300 people a day, and I think they're serving grass-fed beef, and they're not. And I had done all the research and talked to the farms that he was buying from and this and that. They're like, no, Marcus, you're absolutely right. That is, he's not serving it. That's totally wrong. And the people told me, just put a video up, put a YouTube video up, call him out on it, because I called the restaurant 8 times. They wanted nothing to do with me. And then after I put the video up, I got his attention. I got his attention, and I just said, you know what? These chefs need to be held accountable. Nobody's holding them accountable. So I went from him to another celebrity chef, to another celebrity chef, to another celebrity chef, and I only ever said something if I only could prove 100% that I knew that they were misleading. And some of these chefs would actually apologize to me. They would come to the table and say, you caught our typo today, or we mislabeled that. And I knew that they weren't typos. I knew they weren't mislabeled, but that's how they were defending themselves. Mm-hmm. But the change was happening, and they were changing their menu slowly as I was doing this. And it's very saddening to see that what still happens in the industry. Of course, these chefs aren't doing it anymore because the spotlight was put on them, and they never knew that was going to happen to them. So, you know, when you go to a restaurant, do not be afraid to speak up and ask questions. Ask questions, ask questions. Where's the food from? Do you know the farm? Do you know if it's in season right now? Is it really grass-fed? Is it really wild salmon? What's the wild salmon season? Does it come in fresh or frozen? And just ask them questions. And you will start, even if you're not an expert in the topic, you will back the chef. You'll back the chef into a corner that he can't answer questions. And once they stop answering questions, you can kind of see if they're, you know, if they really don't know or if they really know their stuff. So that's one way to kind of get around that, but it's never a guarantee because some chefs just know what to say as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, chefs, they know where to buy and they know the quality, but I know as consumers, we're dealing with this kind of thing all the time. And you go to a fish store, I mean, we've all heard about mislabeling a fish. You know, I've had people on who are, you know, sustainable fisheries, and, you know, they say to you, ask for the boat number, the dock number, and it's like, you know,
right.
Is that really,
you
know, can you really do that?
You can ask for how it was caught. Any great restaurant will buy from a really good fish supplier will know when it was caught, the captain of the boat it was caught on, and how it was caught. Was it gill netted? Was it line caught? Was it long line caught? Was it harpooned? So these are all questions that the chef will actually know or can find out very, very easily for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, so many stores also do the greenwashing thing, you know. They find out what, you know, they know what's trendy, what is, you know, what's popular, and that's what they market to. You know, I saw, you know, gluten-free next to broccoli. You know, it's like, of course it's gluten-free, you know, but, you know, if they can put a sign there and market it and more people are going to buy it, they'll do that.
Right.
You know?
Right. Or they'll put GMO-free.
Right.
But of course, they're not disclosing, well, gee, it was sprayed with tons of pesticides.
Right.
So
right.
A lot of people assume that GMO-free is an organic equivalent, and it's not an organic equivalent by any means.
Right. Or in, you know, some meat will say, no human antibiotics used. Well, 70% of all the antibiotics used are only on animals. So they might not use a human antibiotic, but they use animal antibiotic.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
they,
right.
You know, it's just in the language. They just, you know, they...
In the language. Salmon farms will say they don't administer antibiotics. They don't have to administer. It's just constantly put through in the feed process. So it's automatically there.
Wow.
And pigs, you're not allowed to give hormones, so they'll write no hormones. But they don't mention that they're still giving the pig antibiotics.
Right, right. It's so tricky. You just see how much is controlled by business and lobbying and the influence that these big corporations have on our politicians, so that our politicians don't do the right thing to protect their people that they're supposed to be protecting. They're instead in bed with these big corporations. It's a horrible situation. I mean, what I was talking about at the beginning, I don't know if you saw this very depressing New York Times Magazine article that I was talking about at the beginning, but it was just talking about climate change, you know, what's happening to the climate. And, you know, we all have, or many of us have children and grandchildren on the way, and, you know, you want the planet, you want them to be able to live a harmonious life. And if they're going to be dealing with one climate crisis after another, with rising sea levels and New York City underwater and no electricity, you know, I mean, things that are huge, you know, it's just so scary. Do you want to bring kids into the world if that's what we're facing? And so people really need to take this on in a serious way. And it's just amazing, you know, that you're doing it and you started in your own little circle and you've really been able to get the word out and make a huge impact. It's wonderful.
Thank you. You know, restaurants are one of the leading culprits of the environment. The resources that it takes to put into a restaurant to raise the food, to package the food, to ship the food, to cook the food, to discard the food. The restaurant industry is just a nightmare when it comes to the environment. So every time you go to a restaurant, you can make a much, much, much or less of an impact by choosing a green certified restaurant. Not a restaurant that says they're green, but one that's actually certified green from some type of agency that's actually overlooking and looking at their records, or by eating vegetarian food, you can make an immense impact. And, you know, as a young chef, I was taught, well, just serving 2 less ounces of swordfish will help the swordfish population. Don't serve an 8-ounce piece, serve a 6-ounce piece. And if you want to go one step further, serve a 4-ounce piece and put something else in the plate to offset those 4 ounces. So it's a matter of just taking these small progressive steps. And when chefs start taking these progressive steps, it's amazing because it kind of becomes addictive. And never, ever be afraid to ask a chef a question. You never know when you're going to ask the right question to that chef. For me, it was back in 1998. I had just gotten a job as an executive chef at a country club, and the vice president's wife came to me and goes, "Marcus, can you buy us meat without hormones and antibiotics?" And I said, "Well, I didn't know meat and hormones had antibiotics." And she was absolutely, she handed me article after article, stack of articles. And I read them and I said, "Oh my gosh." So that was when my quest really began on this. So you never know the impact you're going to have on a chef when you ask them the right question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, that's not only on chefs. I mean, I had my local pediatrician join. I ran a food co-op out of my house, you know, after I first had my, you know, vegetarian catering business, and then after my third child was born, I kind of just stayed at home, but I still had my walk-in refrigerator in my garage, so I started a food co-op out of my house. And my pediatrician joined the food co-op, and then she met all these other people that were in my co-op, and we were all into homeopathy and doing alternative stuff, and she was president of the Pediatric Association, you know? I mean, she was very important in that world. And she started getting into homeopathy. And it was just amazing. She changed. I mean, finally, by the time my kids were getting older, you know, I went to her, you know, and she was trying to decide which remedy to give my child. And she has a pendulum. And she's swinging the pendulum. And I'm like, oh, my God. You know, she's went so far the other way. And it was just, you know, and she started just by joining our food co-op, you know, and meeting others that were, you know, I mean, I was squeezing ginger juice with olive oil and putting it in my kids' ears for ear infections, you know, and she started recommending that. So it was just, you know, amazing to see the influence that, you know, regular people can have on professionals just by asking the right questions or, you know,
Absolutely.
Turning them onto articles. And yeah. Really great, really great. So what's your focus now? Are you, you know, in your restaurant most of the time? Are you mostly doing activist work? What's going on with you?
You know, so I'm in my restaurant every day, and I'm in there quite early every day. I do focus on educating people on food. I love to speak to audiences about food and just educate chefs and educate diners, patrons. That's my first passion. I have started helping other businesses as far as coaching and consulting. Restaurants, like I said in the beginning, have the highest failure rate, and it's a shame to watch people pour their life savings into a place and all of a sudden lose it. So I've written two business books, and I really love helping businesses succeed. So I have written two books. I have an online 50 Steps Success Academy for restaurants. I do coaching with restaurants, and I have a new monthly newsletter where I put content out, and I really just help people develop their business and help them market their business.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And have you seen a big change in the restaurant industry since you've, you know, in the last 15 years or so?
Yes, it has changed night and day. The way you market your business, the way you get people in your door, the way you track things, your sales, everything has changed in the restaurant industry. It really has. Technology has been the force of this. Just the way we communicate. It's amazing to have the technology that we have. But on the other hand, you know, guests want things now. They want satisfaction. Instant gratification. If they call a restaurant and you don't answer the phone, they're going to call another restaurant to make a reservation. That's what they can do. They can go right back on their phone and hit the next number down the list. Years ago, that wasn't possible. You would get 5 phone calls from the same guest to make the reservation. Now, if they want to know they're going to a restaurant on Saturday night. And so the technology has allowed us to forward our phones to our cell phone and answer them as a phone call, and things like that have just really changed the way we do business. And of course, we all know the yellow pages are dead. The yellow pages exist online now.
Right.
But nobody gets yellow pages to their house anymore. And, I mean, I remember in the beginning, somebody wanted to call somewhere at the restaurant, and we would basically say, here's the yellow pages. What number can we look up for you? Now they don't need to even ask that question. the right. way people find your menus, the way that people communicate with you as far as finding out about your brand, your personality, or your reputation can all be done instantly. And that was never able to be done years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember when we first opened, it was a Chowhound or one of the other sites. Somebody had actually written a review on us and listed us on it. And we were like, yes, we're on the internet. We're there. You know, of course, we had a website back then. But we're like, somebody wrote about us. Now it's like every day, here comes a new notification. You have a new Yelp review. You have a new TripAdvisor review. Somebody rated your business on Google. So every day people are doing that now, as opposed to, you know, once in a very seldom time frame.
Mm-hmm. You also have your website, Chef on a Mission.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
That site kind of encompasses everything that I do. It has my books on there, my business books. And when you first land on that page, it's going to say, take me to the health section or take me to the business section. And then from there, it'll take you to either my Restaurant Academy section, my YouTube videos on business, or it'll keep you on that health page to talk about wild salmon versus farm salmon, eating vegetarian, or the 50 reasons why you should be avoiding McDonald's. So that's the kind of information you'll find on there. So
right.
because I used to have an extremely active Twitter account where I used to tweet every single day out about eating better food and this and that. And that's when One Green Planet had made me one of the top five food activists actually making a difference. So I was out there preaching about it, and I was actually doing it ourselves in the restaurant.
Uh-huh. Well, Chef, it's been great, great talking with you. I can't believe we're just about out of time. But I'm just so amazed at what you're doing and what you've accomplished, and I'm so glad I found your restaurant. I'm unfortunately not up in that area very much anymore, but, you know, like you said, people who care about the food, they'll travel for it. And we did, and we had the best graduation party. So thank you so much for the work that you're doing. Thanks for joining me, and we'll be in touch. And everybody out there that has been listening, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you all again next week. Bye for now. I'm not afraid.